Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Ooh, yeah.
So hello. Welcome to episode 60 of the Carpcast. I've never caught a 60, have you, Mark?
No, I haven't, but I've caught a fish that went on to be 60. Can I call it 60?
Call it 60. Yeah, me too. I caught that fish. The one that shall remain nameless for this episode. Did I talk about it in the interview? Don't know. Don't know. If you've got a bet on there, on the timing of the naming of such fish, there's a possibility in the interview with Roger Bacon that you might hear it. I don't know. I can't remember. We had quite a technical talk. I talk with Roger a lot on the daily basis, and a lot of the conversations I wish I'd recorded. You know, sometimes we go quite in depth and we're working stuff out, whether it be life or fishing or whatever. And many times I've said that we should just record it. And he's a bit shy talking on the mic, so he's always said, you know, just trick me, just record it and don't tell me. Anyway, we started having a pretty decent conversation earlier, and I was like, shit, I should be recording this. Shall I just record it now? He's like, don't tell me. Anyway, I rang him back off the computer and recorded it, and we had a fantastic interview. So good that we're going to play it out on this show. Lots of relevant stuff to my fishing, really. We're rushing this podcast out tonight because I'm going to go fishing tomorrow. I'm actually going to get back down to Christchurch. I hope to fish Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Come home Sunday. We've got a new moon over this weekend. The easterlies have gone. We've got some warmer southwesterlies, double figures at night, and the pressure's very high, but I'm going to try anyway. And now I might be dicing my death fishing somewhere as busy as Christchurch over a weekend, but I'm just itching to get out. Really itching, you know. I've had a few new bits turn up. I've got a bait order arriving tomorrow. I'm just dying to go fishing. Have you been this week, Mark?
Yes, I have. Well, I've got a couple of sessions to talk about. There's the first one, just after I got back off holiday, the jet lag was still there, and I didn't catch, and I didn't deserve to. I pretty much cast out and slept.
Yeah.
And I really needed it. And that planning was the wife invading the room. What are you after? Oh, my God. She's actually getting a Darth Vader popcorn holder here. Well, she's going to go out, you know.
Darth Vader popcorn.
Yeah, it's next to a R2-D2 one.
All right. Sci-fi. Yeah, sci-fi.
I married a complete geek. But she's easy to die for at Christmas. Anything to do with Star Wars or the hobby of geocaching. But anyway, yes, I slept and didn't catch anything. You know, didn't deserve to, but I caught up on my sleep. I went this week, and it's only a small venue, the Syndicate. There's only one other person on, which is pretty damn, well, almost unheard of, to be honest. It's a busy little place with everyone who's spent good money on the ticket. A lot of the people, it's only the only place to fish in. So I'm thinking, yes. And I cocked it up, basically. If anyone who's listened to the earlier Carpcasts, you know, the early episodes, I'm talking, you know, 2, 3, 4 around then, there was a lot of zig talk. And one of the things that you brought up several times is, how would your season go if you just fished exclusively zigs? I should have done it this session. I look back because, you know, the bottom spots that were all nice. I did everything, you know, right in that. And it just did not happen. But I was like walking around this morning before I left, you know, my sound boxes in my pockets. I was like, there's not a single bubble. It's flat calm. You can see everywhere. You know, yesterday evening there was maybe, it's only about 5 or 6 shows, which is not a lot for there. But I'm just thinking with hindsight, it's always a great thing, but I should have just smashed 3 zigs out and just varied the depths and just fished them around. But
everywhere's fished slow the last few weeks. A lot of this, yeah. These easterly winds, and we've had high pressure, and we've had northerlies, and I won't be too upset. Nowhere's fished great, I don't think. But the fish that have been caught have been big. Have you noticed that?
I have, yeah. I've noticed. There's been quite a few big fish out, and our old friend Martin Russell, who's over at Telias at the minute. He's had, and his first two takes were both 50s.
Really?
So, yeah. Well, yeah, I was on the back of this northerly, which, I say I was on the back of it, it was on the back late-wise, but I've still got an open field behind me, so I wasn't getting much cover apart from the bivvy myself. But no, you can always analyse a session afterwards, but I thought the most productive thing was I was catching up on a couple of carp casts, you know, listening to your last chat with Kev Nash, and also
the
Frank Warwick one, which, you know, both very interesting.
Yeah, well, this week's interview touches on a few of the things we spoke about with Frank. We haven't done a lot of rig talk yet, have we? And Roger's very particular about his rigs, and as is Frank, you know. And you'll enjoy listening to this one as well, I think.
Yeah, I do think we've had quite a few bait chats on, but rigs is something we've not really gone too in depth on with guests, but. Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I know Roger myself, and he's up there. He's one of the best, I think, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Before we go on, I'd like to tell you about DNA Baits. DNA Baits have supported us for over a year now, and we'd like to thank them very much. As a thank you to all our customers, you can get an extra discount off their already decent prices. They're a very fairly priced company. You can get all their stuff off dnabaits.com, order it direct from the website, and if you use the offer code CARPCAST5, you'll get an extra 5% discount when you check out. They do lots of post-free deals, so they do packages direct to your door. You can have any of their boilies. The Switch one, which I'm seeing lots of captures at the minute on the Switch on Facebook, and I know it's a high nutritional bait. I don't know if it's working particularly well at this time of year. S7, which some of my friends absolutely swear by. Jay Walker's had a load of the fish out of Dinton this year, out of the very tricky white swan, including two of the big ones. He upped his PB twice very recently, over the last month. He will not leave home without the Secret 7, or S7 as it's called. You can buy 5 kilo boilie deals. 5 kilo boilies and a pot of hook baits for £45 delivered to your door. They do another option that comes with a litre of your choice of liquid as well. The betaine liquid that I have some of, actually, that I put in some of my spod mixes and hemp mixes, which is a really good fish inducer, especially in cold weather at this time of year. Have a look at the liquid section on the website. You can have a look at the betaine and all the other stuff. They do 10 key boilie deals as well. 10 key of a boilie of your choice and a pot of hook baits, £80 delivered to your door. And there's a 50 key deal if you want to stock up for the autumn. You can have 50 kilos of freezer bait split into a couple of different sizes. You get matching cork dust wafters, cork dust pop-ups, and a litre of hydro wheat or the beta stim I was just talking about. And you can get extra discount off all this stuff. Make sure you use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out at dnabaits.com. What's next, Mark? Seen anything on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I've just seen something while I was sat on the toilet. It was someone shared a one of these Just Giving pages. Here we go, I'm on it now. Miles Carter started it. It says, we're raising $35,000 to help Derek Stritton and friends pay the legal fees needed to prevent the takeover of the Carp Society by deposed former directors.
We've spoken about the Carp Society a lot, haven't we? I'm actually attending or playing in a band on the Carp Super Band, along with a load of other carp anglers, on November the 11th. Apologise for my phone making noises. On November the 11th, which is at the Circus Tavern in Purfleet, Essex. There's an Evening of Carp. If you have a look on Facebook, look up Evening of Carp. It's been run by Crafty Carper, Pip, and all the rest of the Angling Pubs team. You will see me play guitar for the first time in 20 odd years, but there's a load of talkers on there as well, including Daryl Peck. It looks like being an absolutely fantastic night, to be honest. And there is a big raffle there for the Carp Society, which will also help pay these legal fees. But you can also go and check out the Just Giving page that Mark's just mentioned.
Yeah, it's all in a good cause, and I know we've done it before, but the Cat Society, if it can get back to something like it was, it can only be good for carp fishing. Now, there is something else that's just popped into my head, which it's not just on the net, it's a public service announcement.
Yeah.
I've seen one or two people posting, and the latest one is some CCTV footage of a couple of bastards that have broken into someone's garage and had away with all his tackle. So get your stuff secured, alarmed, you know, set bear traps in there.
Yeah, I've seen that shared, actually. I've not watched the video just yet, but I have seen it shared.
I'll tell you about that old fella. Is a former military man. He's a Doncaster fella, and he was actually in the shop last week, and he was almost in tears. He's telling me about all his gear that's gone, and I just hope they catch him. Really do. They catch him before I do.
Yeah, talking of on the net, actually, an evening of carps just popped up on my news feed. How could I forget? Scott Maslin, the fisherman, come EastEnders angler, EastEnders actor, he's on there as well. I think there's, as one of the Carp Society raffle prizes, I think there's 48 hours on orchid fishing with him. Chili's going to be there, along with Daryl Peck. Obviously, Lee Jackson's in the super band, Clive Gibbons, myself, and others. 11th of November. Tickets are available online. Just do a little Google search and you will find it. What next, Mark? Where shall we go to?
It's France. Has Mark Bryant been caning some big fish?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, Mark Bryant, we had on the show, I forget which carpcast it was now, but you'll remember from the interview, if you listen to that one, Mark runs the very, very popular Baitworks bait company, along with fishing, the knowledge of fishing, which is Mr. Simon Scott. Lecturer at Sparsholt and all-round fish expert. We had a two-parter with Simon, didn't we? Some time ago now. It's about a year ago. But Simon knows everything there's to know about fish, so if he's involved in a bait company, you can be damn sure that that bait's been well tested. We had Mark on the show, and he told us a story about how he was very nearly not even with us. He had an extremely serious car accident. There was a very strange set of circumstances that meant that he didn't die, because he should have died. He severed like a main artery, but where he was positioned in the car, where he was trapped inside, actually kept pressure on it to keep it short, and if they'd have had the cutting equipment to have cut him out, the air ambulance took ages to come. So if they'd have cut him out straight away, I forget the story now, as whether they didn't have the equipment, or anyway, it worked out that basically a very critical series of events, if they didn't happen in that order at that exact time, he wouldn't be here now. Thankfully is extremely recovered. There's videos of him training for his French trip. He's been to Gigantica, and he missed a trip last year because he was in a coma for quite a long period of time in hospital. They induced him into a coma because his injuries were so severe, and he missed the lad's annual French trip. He's gone this year and ended up catching one of the chunks. I think it was 8. I'll just find him now and find his message. I think it was 85 pound, which is an extremely large carp, don't you think?
That is a chunky chunk.
Yeah, I forget.
That's like two low 40s moulded into one.
Yeah.
And a 40 is a big, big fish. And 80 is, you know, having never fished in France, you know. That's going to be like a shaved Labrador or something, that big.
Imagine that lumping out right in front of you. Can you imagine? They talk about the old cow dropping from an airplane.
Can fish that big get themselves far out of the water?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's definitely, I don't know if I've seen videos, but certainly in stories of 18, 19 pounders lumping out. 85.8 was the fish, a fish known as Fudgies. He caught it on the 12th of October. So he's extremely happy because, you know, he almost wasn't here to go even go on this trip. He missed a trip last year. It's the first time he's been well enough to get back amongst it, and he catches a very special carp. So yeah, shout outs to Mark. And if you are stuck for a bait to use, definitely try out the Baitworks stuff, because Baitworks are obviously a fantastic, if you listen to the interview, you'll know that Mark knows what he's talking about bait, and obviously he's got Simon Scott and everybody else in there. So by the way, if the new Key Cray, we've got a special offer on that, the Nash Bait. If you go to our website, carpcast.com, you can have a look. There's a couple of 10-key bundles on there. Go and check that out. It's the only place you can actually get Key Cray before it comes out next May. It's just a special offer that we're doing at the minute. So, yeah, go and check out our Facebook.
How long's that offer running for?
It's probably going to be up in the winter. Up until it actually comes out.
Yeah, that's good. I had a message asking me about this evening, so that's totally got to find out for him, and I'm sure he's going to listen and he'll find out there. And yeah, well, we're on
it's going to be up permanently. It's going to be up permanently because until it comes out next year, just because I know some people are concerned about starting on a bait and then not being able to continue getting it. Yes, we will have it, although we've sold that much of it since the last podcast. It's currently, the 15 mils are currently out of stock. We have the 20 mils, but they'll be in stock probably by the time you hear this, by the end of the week certainly, so don't let it put you off ordering. But yeah, sorry, what were you going to say?
Keeping Gary busy, are you?
Apparently, but, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, while we're on we're all on his bait plugs, I know it's still running. If anybody wants 10% off any LA Carp gear, the Bait Kitchen, the code CARPCAST10 is still operational there, and it's good stuff. Even I catch with it, so imagine what you can do.
Yep, we'd like to give out the offers to our listeners. You know, there's obviously DNA Baits, there's discounts on their fantastic products. You've got the Key Cray deal and LA Carp stuff, so it's always handy to save a little bit of money.
And that's one thing that had me smiling when I was listening to your last chat with Cash, about how good bait is such an edge, yet people spend thousands and thousands on tackle and then buy the cheapest boilies they can. And it does give relief, because I'm sure a lot of people out there don't know what an edge bait is, and picking the brains and questioning the person who's making the bait, and get on a good one, the best bait, and fish will eat yours rather than the semolina mix that the fella next door's put his cost to buy.
Time I saw you, me and you were on the famous Cops Lake down at Nash's, the night where I got completely wasted.
yep, it was. We had a good session that session, didn't we? And it seems to have gone from good to even better for me over the last sort of few weeks. You'll know that I went to France not long after. A bit weird, really, because obviously after 35 years of fishing, probably in the last month, I caught my biggest 5 fish ever. So, it turned out all right. On a bit of a roll.
That's pretty crazy. We'll go over them captures in a minute. Did you listen to the Frank Warwick interview of last week? Yeah, managed to listen to that yet?
Yeah, I did actually. Found it really, really interesting. It's one of them, I don't know, it was one of them interviews that it just got me thinking about, about rigs and everyone's approach and, not following the mainstream. I mean, Frank's obviously, I've known Frank for years. It's just probably as long as I've carp fished, and he's always been the sort of angler that thinks outside the box, from 30 years ago fishing with his rods side onto the lake, bent to a full test curve on silt maze, because the spring back rig, where as soon as the fish picks his dislodged the lead, the rod would whip back and hook the fish that way. So yeah, he's always been one for thinking outside the box, as Frank, and it's always worked for him.
Do you think, just thinking of that springback rig, I remember I used to fish like that in the it's in the around the time I was fishing Horseshoe, so that would have been 85 to 88, but there was a craze then of you'd fish your rods at right angles to the spots, and you'd have a good bend in your tip, you'd have your monkey climber, you know, you'd have your line in line clips, in a line clip on the rod. I think we used to fish open bail arms in them days. It might have been just before the sort of bait runners, and it was like you say, soon as the lead's lifted up, obviously the rod springs back. You'd always get screamers in them days anyway. The fish weren't as pressured as they are these days, as you know, on many lakes. You know, you don't get screamers anymore, they just tighten up because the fish have learned not to bolt. So a lake obviously you know pretty well is Christchurch. You've had a lot of fish out there, and we were on Christchurch at the time with Frank discussing, you know, that's the sort of lake where rigs can make a mega difference. And I know you've always thought like that as well, you know, you've always been trying to think about rigs in different ways. What we're talking about is like really, really heavy leads and a springback type rig. Do you think that'd work on Christchurch?
It might do, but obviously that sort of rig or that sort of setup, it all relies on the lead being dislodged in the first place.
Yeah.
So there is an initial amount of force the fish has got to exert on the lead to either pull it out the sill or whatever it's wedged up against. Do you know what I mean? So whether the fish that you're fishing for are that tricky where they wouldn't even do that, they might just. I mean, we were talking what just half hour ago about Frank's anchor rig.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's the sort of rig that I think works on movement. You've got a few different types of rigs that people like to use. You know, you've got the what I call movement rigs, where you know a fish has sucked something into its mouth and it's maybe moving on to the next food item, and the hook then tightens up, twists the hook round and pulls the point of the hook home. Obviously, the anchor rig's that sort of rig, isn't it? Where you know, it does that sort of thing. It turns every time and pricks the fish. And then you've got the other types of rigs where, you know, it's just basically a blowing rig where the fish sucks something in. It realises instantly that it's got a foreign item in its mouth, and it just tries to do the completely natural thing that fish does, that's doing all the time. I mean, fish, when they're feeding on bloodworm or small food items, you know, they're sucking and blowing all the time. The food's going in. The gravel or sand's coming out, so that's just a completely natural thing that a fish does. So I think most of the time a fish will blow. The first thing it will do is blow, and it's on that blow that if I try and hook them on the ejection, on the blowout, rather than the movement, because as we get, you know, as you fish more and more pressured waters these days, you're not getting the movement. The fish have learnt that the movement is working against them. You know, that's why people are hitting, you know, you're sort of like getting twitches, you know, you're not getting runs. But I've always believed that if you ever get a take, it's the last resort for a carp, and that's kind of a, oh shit, there's nothing else we can do, let's get out of here, and it bolts.
So what have you done with your rigs to you know, try and hook them on the blowout as opposed to the tightening up to the lead?
Well, what I've done is, I mean, years ago when I used to fish a water that you've done a lot of fishing on wire side, when I first started to fish there, the lads on there used to say, you know, you could go out in the boat, you'd put a load of particles out up against the island, you'd have fish activity over it for a night or a day, and you go back out in the boat and just your rigs are there. And it used to happen quite a lot. It never happened to me, but it used to happen quite a lot. So I used to think, wow. Obviously, you know, they're obviously feeding on the area, and I don't believe for a minute they're sucking in all them hundreds or thousands of bits of emp or whatever, and they're not sucking the up bait in. They must suck the up bait in, you know, a certain amount of times. Obviously, I think that after the fish has sucked a hook bait in a certain amount of times, they can label that specific thing as dangerous, and then they can feed around it and not suck it in again. But I always thought they were getting that sucking. I just thought they were just blowing out. The rigs were that rubbish. They were just sucking them in, blowing them out. So what I did was, on one session, I went home, and this was before you had the Terry Hearn, sort of like the stiff rig that, that Terry Hearn developed eventually. This was before that was out, and I went home and, you know, I mean, we've all done it before, haven't we? We've got in the bath, you know, fill the bath up with water, you've got your rigs on it, and you've got your section of hose pipe or section of Hoover, which I use the Hoover tube. Bit of plasticine around the end, and, you know, you drop your rigs in, you start sucking and blowing on your rigs. Anyway, when I did it, the rigs were just, it was just out of 10, you'd suck it in and it'd get blown out, and probably as high as 8 or 9 times out of 10, it would just come out. It wouldn't catch the pulse, I mean, the plasticine on the end, and it was just totally ineffective. So then I started changing it. And one thing I could see was the rigs I was using at the time, the obviously the boilie was going in first, pulling the hook in bend first, and then as soon as the fish blew it out, obviously because the boilie was the biggest thing in its mouth, that was the thing with most resistance to water. So the boilie was leaving the mouth first, turning the hook around, and the hook was leaving bend first, obviously. So if you've got a hook leaving fish's mouth bend first, you've got virtually zero chance of hooking it. So what I tried to do at first was just to stop the hook from turning around inside the mouth, and the most obvious way to do that was to extend the shank of the hook. So with a 25-pound piece of amnesia, I was just tying a stiff section, exactly the same as Hearn's stiff section, which came out years later. I was just doing that, and then I was sucking it in, and then when it was blowing it out, the stiff section was just not allowing the hook to turn around. It had to come out, you know, stiff section first, and then the point, and that increased the catching of the point of the hook on the end of the tube. That increased it to, I don't know, maybe four or six out of 10. So it was a lot better. It was a real lot better. And then when I eventually refined it down and actually put a D on the back of it, it was then catching 8 out of 10 times. So once I'd done that, I went straight back to wire side. I went straight to a peg that we both fished the back-to-back, but I didn't fish the normal back-to-back. I fished the one that cuts across the corner where you cast into, yeah, you know, casting along the margin. So I thought I'll try it there, because you can literally, if you're fishing there, you can run around, climb into the bushes, and you can see your hook baits on the lake bed there. Anyway, what I forgot to tell you is, before I actually went home and made this rig up, I did fish that peg, and I ran round and I was watching the fish go down on the hook baits, and they were doing exactly what I thought they were doing. They were coming along the tree line in a probably 6 or 8 fish at a time, and as soon as they were seeing the baited area, they were like fighter planes coming down on something to attack. They just all in sequence turned, went straight down on the baited area, started clearing it up with no caution whatsoever, and you know, I'm now perched on a branch looking at it. This is my conventional rigs, the ones that we're getting done on. I'm perched on a branch thinking, oh my god, you know, it's gonna get it now, it's gonna pick it up now. And they were picking them up. Sure enough, woof, fish sucks my normal straight bottom bait rigs in and just blew it straight out. I was like, oh my god, what? And then it just went straight back to the same rig, sucked it in again and blew it straight out. And I'm thinking, now I've got my head in my hands thinking, oh god, what's going on? No chance. Anyway, I watched him for the afternoon, and I think eventually I had a bite, but I must have counted 15 suck-ins and blowouts before eventually one fish, you know, got slightly pricked and tried to get it. I even seen one fish suck in, and it didn't even blow out. It kind of turned upright as if it was going to swim to the surface, and as it swam away, the lead just pulled the hook and the bait out.
Pulled it out of its mouth.
Just pulled it out, yeah. Just pulled it clean out. So it was like, right, I'll have to get home and try and suss this problem out. And obviously I went home, did the bath experiments, and then came back the following week with this new improved stiff section rig. Anyway, straight back to the same peg, cast it out to the same spot, put the rod on the rest. I thought, right, I'll just run around there and I'll throw a few freebies over this new rig, and we'll see how that goes. And I must have walked, 10 yards from the peg, going around the tree line, and the rod was away instantly. So there was no bait there, and I was pretty sure that was probably the first sucking to hooking ratio, just instantly straight away. Anyway, that day I think I had about 10 fish that day, and the rig was just nailing him every time. And ever since then. I've always geared my rig mechanics to the blowing rather than the movement, because, you know, the fish that we're fishing for these days are just that pressured. I think the movement is virtually gone. Obviously, in certain baiting situations where you can get them going, you can get them preoccupied, then the movement sort of rigs do work, but I always go for the ejection rigs.
So, have you experimented with doing this same thing with the, you know, trying to keep the hook so it can't turn round on the blowout? Have you tried doing that and using bottom bait rigs? Because one of the things I find with pressured rigs is a lot of those rigs with the big long Ds that go right down the stiff section, you have to use a pop-up with them. And pressured fish can spook off pop-ups. Have you found a way of doing it where you still fish your snowman or like your bottom bait type rig, but it's still a stiff section, so by the time they've sucked it in, it still can't blow out because it's stiff?
Well, truthfully, no, I haven't. I've thought about it a lot, and I haven't. No, you know, obviously for my bottom bait fishing, you know, I've fished pretty much the same as what everybody else has. You know, your Johnny Matt rigs or your.
You've just muted there.
I'm actually on my Facebook now, sending you a picture that of a bottom bait rig that I have thought about that might do that.
Yeah, I'm thinking if as long as you've still got that stiff section to stop it turning, even if it's lay flat on the deck, by the time, as long as it's like a swivel point, so you've got your stiff section going down to whatever. And then there's, you know, a hinge or, you know, whether it's a swivel or whatever it is, it ties to your supple braid or however you're doing it. As long as there's some sort of anchor point there, like a heavy weight or something, you can lay it all on the bottom. If the fish is going to suck it in, it's going to, you know, suck in, as we said. And then when it tries to eject that bait, it should be, you know, the stiff bit should be stopping it turning still.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a picture of a rig here that I made recently, but I've just not cast out yet. But it's the exact same principle. It's a bottom bait rig with a 1.5-inch, 2-inch stiff section on the end, just to stop that turning again.
You got me thinking now. Obviously, I'm actually going to head down to Christchurch tomorrow, and I'd plan to fish. I'm now thinking, oh, do I need one of these anti-ejects? So there's like the problem we're trying to get around. We're trying to hook these fish like instantly. So one way of doing it is to use very, very short hook links, so that the fish doesn't get a choice. Use a heavy lead and a very short hook link, and the fish doesn't, you know, shorter than everybody else. So whatever the fish has got used to, not, you know, the distance, it knows it's safe, it can move a little bit. You've got a hook link shorter than that, but and it nails it, especially if you add that kind of, you know, that tension rig with a heavy lead and maybe a little bit super tight lines with bending the rod. You know, the second it does move that lead, it is nailed. And I think like an anchor rig type thing on a very short rig, it's going to nail it every time, because if it moves the lead. My problem with that is when you're big fish fishing, some wise big fish, they suck in from further away. And if you've got a super short hook link, you know, how often is that rig ever actually going to get in this fish's mouth? You know, I've definitely seen fish suck from a long distance away, and so, you know, certainly wiser fish can do that as well. I always like to have a little bit of play. I don't know. I'm like, there's a series of solutions. I think maybe yours is the solution. You know, you can use it as long as you've got that stiff bit in there to stop the rig turning. You can use a long rig, can't you?
Yeah. I would always go for the blowing, for the blowout to try and hook a fish. Because if you, some of them rigs where you've got, you know, you've got sometimes think the lead never even moves. It just goes in and goes out the fish. I mean, the bait, it gets sucked in and gets blown out. And I think the fish do that. They're doing that all day, every day on all lakes. And it's kind of, the way I look at it is, it's kind of like they're that confident in doing it, you can use their confidence against them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if you've got, you know, that can use their own strength against them. They think they've got strength of, oh, I can suck it in, I can blow it out, I can get rid of it. Then I always aim for trying to nail it on that sort of rig, because I think that's the sort of rig that will catch them out sooner than anything else.
I like the sound of it. Obviously, you caught plenty of fish out of Christchurch when you did fish it.
Yeah, I did, and obviously, I caught quite a few fish on maggots. You know, that's what I know. I didn't go there and start fishing maggots. I'd never fished maggots before I went there, before I started fishing there. But my first two or three sessions on there, I went just with the normal bait that you gave me, your special bait, which is great. And I went using the rig that I've been using, the Long D anti-eject stiff rig that I've been using for a few years now, that I've caught fish on everywhere. It's a brilliant single up bait rig. If you want to cast it out, you know, you can use it on a long hook length and have it all critically balanced, so you can cast it into silt and it sinks down really slow. The beauty of that being, if a fish does come along and sucks it, it flies in. You know, the further in the better with that type rig, because, you know, the farther in it goes, the further it's got to go out, and the more distance it's got to travel out, the more chance you've got of hooking it on that way out. Do you know what I mean? And the first time I used that, I took it to Christchurch. I had three or four fish in a couple of nights at a time when there'd been no fish caught. It was that changeover time, you know, when they go from sort of October to November and there's a few lads sneaking the maggots in, and they, you know, you're not supposed to use them before November. A few lads sneaking them in and catching fish. There's lads that are not using them, but what are using? And I went and had a bit of a result first time on there, and quite funny actually, because at the end of the session, one of the bailies actually came up to me and said, "Roger, have you been using maggots?" So I said, "No, I've never used maggots in my life." He said, "It's just that there's been no fish out for a week, so and you've come along and had a bit of a result. The lads over there think you're using maggots." He says, "No, honestly, I'm not using them. I've never used them." And that, again, I think was more the rig than the bait. You know, it was the rig that was catching them out.
Because they're sucking it in constantly anyway. And we're only catching them when they hang themselves, normally.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, we all know that a good bait or application of bait or something different like the maggots, I mean, for the avoidance of doubt, you're talking a few years ago before maggots were banned completely from Christchurch. Obviously, you can't use them at all now.
No, at that time, you could use them. I think it was the start of November, you could start using maggots. And I was fishing a couple of weeks into October, or the last week in October, when it was almost changeover time.
Yeah, so I don't know. See, I've got my plans ready for my session this week, and I think Frank might even be coming down with us as well. There's a lot of, we're all trying to solve the same problem, and that is to hook pretty wary fish. Now, I can't argue with any of the logic that you're just saying there with those blowback rigs. I know you fine tuned that. I remember you showing me that super long D rig, like, you know, I think the first time you'd ever done it. Because you're using like a braid section going to the hook, and then a separate stiff section running alongside that's like curved because it's under pressure with a big long D in it. And I remember when we fished the British Carp Championships 14 years ago on Pendle View. That was the first time you showed me that rig. We went down for a test session to have a look at the lake. There had been guys on there like blanking for a couple of days, and I think we stalked a couple each out the edge within 10 minutes of being there, and it was the first time you had a bit of fake corn. I've still got the picture of that fish that you caught actually with his rig hanging out of its mouth. It was just what single yellow bit of, you know, plastic corn on that like mega long D rig.
I've actually forgotten about that.
Yeah, that was probably 14 years ago. And that was the first time I ever saw it, and like you, it was a tricky rig to tie in those days. I mean, I know you've probably got it down a lot easier now, but I'm going fishing tomorrow and I don't know how to tie that rig. So I'm thinking, right, what can I do that's different? So I think a lot of the times the fish have learnt how most anglers fish, like pressured fish, they've learnt how most anglers fish, and they've deduced a way to stop themselves getting nailed most of the time. Like, and as soon as you do just something slightly different, because they ain't that clever, Like, as soon as you do something different, you know, if everyone's using 6-inch hook links, using a 10-inch hook link throws them, or using a 2-inch hook link when everyone's using an 8-inch can throw them. Like, just at the end of the day, they want the food they want to eat, don't they? And we're just trying to trick them in during that process of a meeting. So I know you haven't used it, I haven't seen it much, but that Nash trigger link, which is obviously like an elasticated hook link, that's been a difference on lakes. And I've always have a spool with me and I never use it because it's not cumbersome, but it's quite thick. But I'm wondering about using some sort of stiff section for your hook, like Terry Hearn D-rig style, you know, which I can tie up pretty simply. You know, it's just the same as tying the stiff section of a chod rig or whatever. Using that and then using a short boom of like trigger link or something like that, and elasticated. I mean, we used to make those rigs, you'll remember, from the 80s. So we used to make them with pole elastic, like double lengths of pole elastic.
Yeah, the old buffer rig.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I remember, was it Malin or someone used it back in the day? It was like, there was like four strips of pole elastic tied to a swivel, because you needed number lengths for the strength. But obviously that trigger link does pretty much that. It has that effect.
I've never used a trigger link, and I think in the last few weeks I've heard it mentioned a few times, obviously, when we've been down Nashes. And it is something I really do want to get my hands on and want to have a look at, because, you know, it's just different. Do you know what I mean? It's just giving the fish something different. If you look at 99.9% of all carp anglers, you know, they've got the same, like Frank said, they've got the same size lead on, roughly the same length hook link, and you're teaching them to deal with that specific type of setup. They're getting practice and practice. They're probably coming into contact with it, I don't know what, hundreds or thousands of times per season, each fish.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like that. If you're a blind person, you know, you'll walk through a shopping centre and bump into every shop door and bench or banner that's in there. But if you walk through it 100 times, it's not long before you'll be able to just navigate it, and you won't bump into anything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like we're giving the fish that shopping centre sort of practice route time and time and time and time again. And if you just keep giving it, they're just going to just know exactly what to do. It's just they can do it blindfolded.
So, yeah, just something slightly different. I mean, I think that's the route I might go down this week, is just trying something different to the norm, maybe making a boom section. See, my problem is I don't like pop-ups. I don't use them very often. I've caught plenty of fish on them, but quite often out of my three rods, maybe one will be on a pop-up, like every other session, you know, usually. I'm using, you know, my same sort of bottom bait rig. So I like the idea of trying to... I mean, I remember when... I used like the Terry Hearn stiff boom exclusively for a number of years. That was my go-to rig on the wire, because it was an anti-tangle rig, and a lot of the time on the wire...
That was your go-to pop-up rig?
It was my go-to pop-up rig, but a lot of the time on the wire, on wire side, we were casting at the extremes of my casting ability, you know, 100 yards plus, to cast it, which, you know, most of the island swims, bar the helicopter, they're all 95 to 100 and more, with the sort of longest ones. Well, the cabins were the longest ones at 140, which I never fished the island from there, but even like the point, you know, was 110 115, and then the gravelly swims were like 125 to 130, that sort of distance, which were the extremes of my range at the time, because you weren't allowed to use leaders on there. You had to use 15 pound line, so it was very difficult to put a 4-ounce lead any further than that without breaking the rules. So you also wanted a rig that didn't tangle, because if you took 50 casts to get it there, you wanted to know that it was fishing properly once it landed. Yeah. So
once it went the distance, you wanted to be confident it was fishing.
Yeah, if you get that one cast
not tangled
that went, yeah, you wanted to know. So the stiff link never tangled. Like, you know, you could use that stiff link boom, the swivel in the middle, and a pop-up D-rig tied onto it, so it was never coming off. and you knew it was fishing. And obviously once I caught a few fish like that at extreme range, that was my go-to rig for a few years. I then went on to Elstow 2, and I was still using that rig on there, but I was using a lot of particle on Elstow 2, so fishing over a sort of spod mix with everything in it, and I was using a lot of fake corn in those days. A lot of the times it wasn't popped up. It was a stiff link, but lay on the bottom, and I did have bites on there using that rig. I remember one session I had two bites, lost them both. I remember my first ever takes out of there, out of the Terminator. I lost them both, but I had two carp on, and they were both from stiff rigs laid down. Because I was using I was using normal maize with like one or two, it was like four bits of maize altogether. There was like two bottom bits and two floating bits, but it wasn't actually popping it right up. It was laid down flat, and I had the bites on, hooked the fish, you know, we were getting cut-offs and stuff on there because it's extremely snaggy. It's before I'd sort of learned the lake and learned that you had to use shock leaders and, you know, really sort of heavy tackle because it was so snaggy. So I didn't lose them because the fish dropped off or anything. I lost them because they were cut-offs. But I was using D-rigs at the time, stiff D-rigs with bottom baits, and getting pickups. So I might have a little look at that again, you know, using that type of stiff link, Terry Hearn type rig, but with something that lays on the deck. Because when I've done, I used that rig for a lot of years, and when I've done tests on lakes where we know we're going to get bites, places like King George's and Altrincham, when we used to go in the winter, and it was a good place for testing stuff, wasn't it, on there? Because you know, you knew kind of what to expect, you knew when you're on fish and stuff. And I tested like my snowman rigs, same on Dead Man's in Manchester, tested snowman rigs alongside like stiff link pop-up rigs. And while I would get bites on the stiff link, the bottom bait rig would always go first, like 100% of the time. Never once on any time where I tested this did the stiff link go before the snowman rig that was laid on the deck. Not once in all the times I had two rods on the spot. Now I do believe that stiff link might have caught the odd fish that the bottom bait rig wouldn't have caught, just because of how some, you know, the shapes of some mouths, you know, I always find like the Hoover type mouths, like that overslung top lip, stiff links work better, pop up rigs work better for that type of fish. You know, fish like Mr. Angry, like the paddle coming out of the wool pack that's dead now, like a lot 80% of the capture of those sort of fish were on stiff links, because I just think they're better at getting away with normal rigs, but they can't quite deal with the choddy type stiff links. But so I think a bottom bait rig's more effective the majority of the time.
I definitely would prefer to fish a bait that is closer to the bottom.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, in an ideal world, what you'd want is, and it amazes me when you see quite a lot of rigs where, you know, there is a combi rig, and it's always stiff, and then towards the end is 2 inches of supple.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's always that way, and I think really, I don't know, why not do it the other way? Why not have the stiff section at the end, the couple of inch, and the supple section is the majority, you know, the 3/4 of the hook length. You know, even if it is on the bottom and fish as a bottom bait, because, I mean, even when you fish the rigs like, say, the Johnny Matt rig, now you've seen that, I mean, that's just got, basically, that's like a 2 or 3 inch long loop, isn't it, that you can just put through the eye and then over the top of the hook, so you can change the hook really quickly. Now, you can fish that on a bottom bait, and again, you've got two lengths of braid running along the bottom there, so it's not a case of, you know, it's too stiff or it's too thick to have something in that position on your hook. You know, fish still pick that up, so why would they not pick a stiff, you know, a single stiff section up that's got a length of supple braid, you know, coming off the back of it?
Yeah, well, that exact rig does kind of that effect, doesn't it? Because a lot of people use a coated hook link, and then that last bit where the D is and stuff is a stiff section, isn't it? So
exactly,
could be one of the reasons why that rig's been so effective over the last I seen Johnny Matt using that over 10 years ago. I like the idea of that. I mean, I know from watching you fish, like, you've always used long braided hook links with a little stiff 2-inch stiff section at the end. I mean, you've used that for a long time, haven't you, as your sort of go-to pop-up rig?
Oh yeah, as my go-to pop-up rig, or single up bait fishing, or just casting and showing fish, I always go for a fairly long up length, normally longer than anyone else that I'm fishing alongside, and that long D rig that you see me use, slow sinking, so it just sinks and just settles on any sort of, you know, any bottom that it lands on.
Well, we can't argue with your results over the last over the last 10 years. You've always caught more than everyone else in the same circumstance, but this, what's happened this last month? I mean, we're on the cops. You had a PB, and then another fish straight after it that would have been a PB. You had a 52, what was it?
Oh god, I can't even remember. The first fish,
it's 52.10, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, I think the first fish was 52.10. I'm not sure the name of that fish, was it? Do you know what the name of it was? Was it?
I think they called it a champagne fish.
Yeah, not been caught for a while. That came completely out of the blue. I wasn't expecting that bite. In the middle of the afternoon, if you can remember.
Yeah.
That ripped off. And then, was it the afternoon?
The following day.
The following day, middle of the afternoon again. Another fish, but again completely the opposite to what we've just been speaking about. It wasn't pop-up rigs or blow rigs. They were movement rigs, they were short hook lengths, quite heavy, you know, 5 ounce inline flattened pair leads, very short hook lengths with a little bag on, dropped into the edge with, you know, a hemp and crumb and what have you around it, small amount of bait, because obviously you're only fishing for bites on that sort of place. You never expect to get any sort of hit. Very flat lines. So yeah, day two, that one, another fish, which was, did you say it was normally a 50?
Yeah, it's one I had at 51 last January. Oh yeah, January just gone, so this year.
Yeah, this time it was it?
Yeah.
48, 14, so yeah, 35 years of fishing, and then in 48 hours, my two biggest fish ever. It was yeah, it's crazy.
And then you had a session, was it last week, week before, on Saucy in France, a lake that we're going to hope to be taking over the bookings in the near future. I need to tie that up with Phil, but we're going to be running trips out there, which is a cracking little lake, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I fished it. That was the second time I'd fished it. Recently was the second time I'd fished it. First time. Same time last year, but it was a lot warmer. Everybody caught. It is a really nice lake. It's only small, you know. You get a lake booking for about 6 people, and the lake is not full, but you know, there's 6 angles on. You've got a couple, you know, you've got 3 or 4 pegs you could still move to. So it's just nice number. Yeah, we went there with a few of the lads. There was only 4 of us fishing it that week, so I was really up for it. I thought, you know, only 4 lads on for the week. The lake can take 6. We've room to move, so we've got plenty of space. I did have three pegs in my mind for the draw. So I'm thinking, you know, I've got a choice of any 3, and there's only 4 of us here. I'm bound to come out top 3 and get at least one of my chosen spots. So we had the draw. Paul, who was with us, Paul from Liverpool, who's been on a couple of our trips, who always seems to come out number one. God knows how he does it. He put his hand in the bag first. There's only 4 balls in this bag at the time. He pulls his out, doesn't show it anyone, and then the rest of us pull out. I pull mine out. Paul shows us his. He's got number one. Somebody shows number two. I look at mine, and I've got number 4. I'm thinking, oh no, I can't believe it. So yeah, came out last. The 3 lads that I was with, they went. It was quite obvious where the fish were that afternoon. They were up one end of the lake. There'd been a few fish caught up there the previous week. It was where we all wanted to go. I mean, I would have gone up there myself if I would have come out in the first 3 in the draw. So the 3 lads that I was with, they sort of stitched that end of the lake up. I ended up opposite end, shallowest end. No fish there. It was obvious there was no fish there. But I thought, you know, I might as well find a few spots, put my baits out, and, you know, I've seen it. I've not been to France. I've not fished France a lot over the years, but I have noticed that what is happening at the start of the week can be a lot different to what is happening by the end of the week, you know, once everyone starts spawning or baiting up and fishing. So I was kind of hoping that I'll find my spots And then you never know, towards the end of the week, you know, the fish might move down and I might get a couple of chances. And then, sure enough, halfway through the week, I mean, the lads did catch, I think they had about three or four fish, sort of, I don't know, I was probably talking Sunday, Monday. On the Tuesday, one of the lads had a good fish of 50. Still no signs of fish down my area. But then on the Wednesday afternoon, I had to take out the blue, which ended up cussing me off. Didn't even feel the fish. It just, as it tightened up, the line just parted. So obviously, late second, I'm like, shit, you know, stressed out. But then saving graces, I'm thinking maybe they're moving down here. Anyway, on the Thursday morning, I heard a fish before it got light in front of me. So, you know, I think at least there's a fish here, there's some fish moving down. And then that afternoon, I had a fish which was, I think it was 47, and that was on a boilie, that was on one of my boilie rods. But all week, quite funny really, funny story, all week, Steve, who's the bailiff on there, obviously I've been struggling and not catching any fish. He'd been coming down to me for cups of teas, and he was saying, get tigers on, Rog, get tigers on. So I'm like, oh no, I'm not using tigers. I've never used them before, believe it or not. I've never used tigers before. And he was saying, no, the lads last week, they struggled, but you know, until they put maize and tigers out, then he had a few bites. And I was, no, I'm sticking to me. But the fish that I'd lost that cut me off, that was on my boilie rod. But after I had that bite, there was a rod that I was fishing right across to the opposite margin, only a rod length off the opposite margin, which was quite easy to bait up. So I said to him, right, I'll put tigers on that rod just for the next 24 hours. So put tigers on that rod, run around the lake, bit of emp and a few tigers over the top of it. Sure enough, on the Wednesday, on the Thursday, I had that, I'd caught my first fish, and it was day 47, and it was on tigers. So now I'm thinking, oh, he's, you know, Steve's saying to me, told you, you know, get the tigers on, you'll catch, you know, they're only picking tigers up at the moment. So I thought, right, Thursday afternoon, what I'll do is I'll put all rods on tigers and I'll just cast them out and leave them until the end of the session. So that's what I did. Rebaited Thursday afternoon. Friday morning came around. I woke up Friday and it was obvious there was fish down my end of the lake now, because it's only 4 foot deep and I could see patches of bubbles coming up from, you know, different parts of the lake. You always know when something's going on because you start seeing stuff at range that you're not sure what it is, so you end up getting your binoculars out. And it was the first time that session I'd actually got my binoculars out of curiosity. So even that made me think something's going on, the fact I'm seeing suspect signs. So through the binoculars, I could see patches of bubbles here, there, and everywhere. So, you know, I'm putting a cup of tea. And I actually spoke to one of my mates, Wayne, who was on another lake just down the road. And I was saying to him, you know, even though I've only had, you know, one fish, I'm sitting here really confident. I won't be surprised if I catch more than one today because it does look like they're here. Anyway, put the phone down to him, and a couple of hours later, I had my first bite. Good fight off a fish, landed it probably 20 yards to the left of where my setup was. And I thought, as that went over the net, I thought that looks upper 40, maybe 50. Made it look big. And just as that went over the net cord, I just thought, was that one of my alarms? You know, you just think you can hear something. So put me my rod in the rushes and sort of walk back fast, not running, but walk back fast, just in time to see the bobbin tight up against the rod. It was the same rod that I had my first fish on tigers from, the rod that was right across the other side of the lake. Anyway, hit that. That had moved probably 10 or 15 yards to the left because I was a bit slow tightening up to that one. Played that one. That gave me a real fight, that one. By this time, Steve the bailiff had walked down from the caravan. He was watching me play it. Good battle for about 20 minutes. Eventually, it went over the net cord. And even then, when I landed it, I didn't think it was as big as the one that I'd just landed, which I thought was, you know, late 40s, 50s. So we got them both on the bank. And sure enough, the second bite was a 63-10. Wow. Believe it. It was, yeah. So within a couple of hours, I think the first one was 48, late 48s. And the second one was 63-10.
Both on tigers.
Both on tigers.
Obviously, I'm going fishing tomorrow. I'm waiting for a bait order to turn up of some boilie, and I've after you telling me that story last week, I've Nash do some like candy nut tigers, like a tiger nut slush mix. It's quite sweet.
Well, as it happens, that was exactly what I caught them fish on, because when I decided to use tigers, I never had no tigers. So I went up to Paul, who was fishing peg one, who uses tigers a lot, and said, you know, Paul, have you got any tigers? And he went, oh, I've got a bag of these shelf life tigers, Nash things, these candy crush ones.
Yeah.
So that's what I got. I got a bag of them off him, and that's exactly what I was using. I've actually got half a dozen bags on order now that are being delivered this week.
Yeah, I've ordered a box of them because we've had this conversation before, but I probably caught more fish on tiger nuts in lifetime, 30 odd years carp fishing, than any other bait. I used to use them all the time back in the early days in the 80s. Horseshoe was a tiger nut water. It was obviously quite a cheap bait. You'd buy a sack of them and then you'd make a bucket up a week before you went fishing, because you'd need to leave them stewing out the back, and they'd start fermenting and all the juice would go really gloopy. It was part of the process of fishing for me. I enjoy it, and you know, this juice would go thick eventually. You know, you soak them in water for like a week and it'd go thick in the end, like this tiger nut juice basically, and you know, it'd go like sloppy, and they were perfect then. You'd take a week, 10 days to go like that sometimes, and then you'd spend all day spotting them out on horseshoe for a chance of 2 hours of the fish being over you, because there was thousands of fish in that lake in them days. And I used them for years. They were my first go-to bait pretty much everywhere, because boilies were expensive. I used to roll my own boilies, so I'd roll a kilo of boilies and then have loads of tiger nuts pretty much everywhere. Six egg mix of boilies and the thing of tiger nuts. And until you told me that story, I'd kind of forgotten how effective they are, because there are definitely times of year where a fish will pick up a tiger nut over a boilie. You know, when lakes are fishing slow, they'll pick up a tiger nut. And
well, it definitely seemed to be the case recently on Saucy in France. You know, the 2 weeks previous to me being on there, the fish were getting caught over, you know, feeding maize and having tigers on the oak. The bailiff was saying, don't even put a boilie out, use tigers. And that's one thing, if there's one sort of thing that does hold me back in fishing, is I do not like to change. I'm very set in my ways, and you know, if I'm using a boilie and a new one comes along, I'll be the last one to get on it, because you know, I like to be confident in what I'm doing. So I don't even know why I've never used tigers over the years, because you know, fishing through the 80s, I think most anglers used peanuts one time or other. Brilliant bait, you know, and it was just a natural progression. Or it used to always lead on to tigers, but I just never made it. I just never used them. God knows why.
So you'll always have some tigers with you in future.
I'll always have some tigers in future. I've been thoroughly converted, definitely.
Yeah, and they have a habit of nabbing the big fish. There's a lot of lakes when I've done the low stock big fish type fishing. There's a lot of the times the big ones, you know, the ones that you want, they are coming on tigers. I've heard that story so many times and done it, you know, that sometimes for some reason they seem to trick up bigger fish, trip them up, you know, like, whereas a boilie seems more obvious.
Well, it makes you wonder how many, I mean, we both know that there's how many fish each year you see in the magazines that have been caught on, you know, Company X or Company Y, but really they've been caught on tigers.
Yeah, I've known a lot of fish, you know, peanuts, dry roasted peanuts, tiger nuts, various baits. You know, I've been on the lake at the time and these big fish have been caught, you know, newsworthy fish, front cover type fish, and I've known what they've been caught on. It's not always what was printed.
Yeah.
So, you know, that obviously goes on, but I mean, it's always the same, you know, you give an angler that's a bit more of a thinking angler, a better angler than anyone else, you give them a bait that's better than everyone else and they're going to have some ridiculous results. But it's tiger nuts or something I'd forgotten about really until you told me that story last week on Saucy. Not forgotten about, but it's so easy, you know. You know, I've used Nash bait for years, been super confident in it, and you know, and I get a deal on it, so you don't, it's lazy really. Maybe I've missed out on fish on times when, you know, using particles again, you know. And I used particles when I was younger because of, surely because of price, you know, being able to put more bay in, you know, I wanted to put a full bucket of bay in, and you just can't do that with straight boilers, you know, paying £8, £9, £10 a kilo, whatever they are. So it was more a cheap thing for me. Obviously, as boilers have got cheaper to me for having relationships with Nash Bait, like I've been able to use more boilie and less, and that definitely helps in circumstances. You know, if you can put 10 kilos of boilies in and they're not used to seeing those quantities, it's definitely can be an edge. But, you know, the cooler box of hemp, you know, 15, 20 kilos of particle, cooler box of hemp, 10 tins of sweet corn, and a few tiger nuts and other stuff scattered in. Like, I haven't fished that way for quite a lot of years.
No, I've not fished like that. I used to fish like that all the time. Cooler box of hemp, you know, equal amount of pellet, just mass baiting, really. I've not fished like that for a long time. Obviously, like yourself, with getting deals from different boilie companies, I just tend to stick with boilies, you know, various sizes, but always boilies and normally quite a lot of them. And it's probably cost me. It's probably, you know, I now realise it has probably cost me over the years, where, you know, tigers would have probably scored for me.
Yeah, we've got the best of both worlds now. I mean, there's a lot of companies doing pre-prepared pre-prepared particle, and Nash have only started recently doing that Candy Crush stuff, which is, it's all smashed up tigers, isn't it? It's quite liquidy, nice and sweet smelling. I'd definitely be, it's not an advert by the way, but I am going to always have some with me, I think, in my spod mix where I hadn't done recently. So you set the scene now. I mean, I can hear you zip going up and down on the bivvy. You're fishing right now, aren't you?
Yeah, fishing now. I'm on Grenville Lake in Cambridgeshire. Not been back here, obviously, with fishing Copson Church with you and going to France recently. It's been probably 6 weeks since I've last fished this place. I'm a new member here, joined in, got my ticket in July. Probably fished half a dozen times, caught every time. I mean, this place has got a high stock of carp. It's got a lot of fish in it. I think there's 1,200 sort of what you'd call the normal carp you'd fish for. And in addition to that, there's been 300 or 400 of fish that you had in stock cages have escaped. So it's 300 or 400. I don't know, 5 to 8 pounders. Charging around the lake. Last time I fished here 6 weeks ago, they were charging around the lake and they were eating anything they could come across. Since then, it's slowed right down. Apparently they have some massive hatches on here, some sedge hatches in October, and it's common that when the hatches start, the fishing does get really hard. It slows right down, and that's where we're at the minute. It's doing some bigger fish, you know. There's a lot of forces in here. It's done a couple of weekend just gone, but it has gone a lot harder. I woke up this morning and on this lake, you know, you'll stand out first light and you'll see at range you will see fish. You know, normally you'll see, you know, too many fish to count in of a morning, but this morning I looked quite hard and it was flat calm like a mill pond, and I didn't see a fish this morning at all. So that is super unusual for the fish. I mean, it's like there's no carp in it. So, you know, it's high pressure, flat calm. It has been that. We've had these easterlies for, 2 or 3 weeks. But apparently tonight, starting tonight and going through for the rest of the week, we're going to get some southwesterlies. By this time tomorrow, there'll be double figure. So there's a wind change coming, which is going to blow down towards where I am. I've got 3 rods out on a spot with about 10 kia bait, 20s and 10s out there. So yeah, I'm just hoping that before the end of the session comes, something happens.
People been trying zigs during this sedge hatch sort of period?
I've no idea, mate. I don't know. Obviously, I've just come back, but you know, you would automatically think that if there's a massive hatch going on somewhere, then, you know, get the zigs out. I'm not sure I don't know if they'd be allowed. I think there's a minimum sort of hook length stroke line breaking string that you're allowed to use. I think it's 15, so you'd have to put a zig out with some sort of 15 pound line. But I don't know. None of the regulars have mentioned it to me.
The Was it one of our friends Eddie that had a fish on £15 line with a 15 mil boilie on the zig?
Yeah, he had out of the lake that I run, Dead Man's up Manchester way. There's a lot of in one corner. You got the deep corner, which unless you get quite tight to the opposite bank at about 120 yards, it's mega deep. But we used to see the big fish, the halfling show all the time over the deep water. And we said for years, someone needs to, why not fish a zig rig? Deep water was, I think it was about 24 foot deep in that spot. Anyway, Eddie threw a zig out there one day, 15 foot zig rig with 15 pound line, a normal pop up boilie on, and jumped in his bivvy and went to sleep. And sure enough, a couple of hours later, it tightened up and the half limb was on the end. But to be honest, I mean, if the fish are completely not used to seeing anything like that there, then I don't think there's any need for finesse. You don't need to have eight pound line, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you never know. Maybe I should be fishing 15 foot zig rigs out there.
Stuffy Eddie, we used to call him, for good reason. He'd just chuck rigs in the middle of weed and stuff, wouldn't he? And just a normal rig in the middle of weed and get in bed.
You'd never find an angler that would make it look so easy. So little effort, but yet he used to catch the fish.
Just goes to show, innit? I mean, who else is, he wouldn't sit there all day looking for clear spots in the weed, would he? If the fish were there and there was weed in front of him, he'd just cast in the middle of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, thinking about it now, I can't think the last time I've seen him climb a tree in probably 20, 30 years of fishing. He just doesn't bother. He just fancies an area, casts out, gets in his bivvy, and then just waits to see what happens. Stuffy Eddie.
Okay, well, we've been nearly an hour here. It's absolutely flown, and we haven't discussed anything like, history, the 80s and Northwest. Well, so
there's so much. But so what are you doing? Are you going to Christchurch?
I'm going to go fishing tomorrow. I'm going to wait for this bait. If the earlier the bait turns up, the more chance there is of me getting there before dark tomorrow. But I'm still in two minds what I'm going to do rig-wise. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to stick to the anchor rigs with... certainly on one or two rods, but shorten the hook links and use heavier leads. I think I'm definitely going to do that. I haven't got any heavy inlines at the minute, which I think is one of the changes I need to make. I need to order some.
Oh yeah, inline. I mean, I'm looking at my lead pouch now and it is full of inline. That is my go-to lead. If my fishing situation can allow it, it's inlines all the way. That's my first option.
Yeah, just not having any play in the rig and it being able to tighten up to the rig. But the last lake, not a super riggy lake, but a lake where there were groups of fish over you and you could you had to think about the fishing situation. There was Elstow 1, and I remember there, I mean, a lot of people were using hemp pellet and plastic corn over the top. And I remember I caught pretty well on there in the short period of time that I fished. And I was using me sticks threaded down the hook link. I was using my normal snowman rigs, but very, very short hook links, like 3-inch hook links with a stick threaded down it. And then obviously using like a quick link clip, which actually gives you some play, so the fish can suck it from any angle, but with a very short hook link. And I had quite a lot of fish on there in short space of time. Now, that was one of those lakes where you could fish a spot that the regulars used to, put a bucket of bait out every morning on their spots. And literally, these use hemp and pellets, so you could see it slicking up. When the fish are on your spot, like the lake would go flat calm right over it, and you could see when fish were on your spot. It was rotated at weekends, and people used to have to reel in at a certain time, like twice a week, when it on a Sunday and or Monday morning, and on a Friday where like the rotor would change over. And it was literally like flicking the switch. The second everybody's lines got reeled in, you'd see the spots start slicking up.
All the slicks would start to come up.
Yeah, so the fish knew once the lines were out of the water, and they'd like hammer the spots. But because you were using an oily mix, like you could physically see what spots the fish are on, and you used to stand there in the car park, like, before choosing your swim where you were going, and you could just look for where the fish were by the slicks coming up, because everybody fished the same way. I actually took that method onto other lakes. I've forgotten, actually, when I went on I think it was Willington afterwards, a lake not too far away, which is like a little club lake that had a big 40 in it. And I used to use hemp a lot in those days, which was oily, and I used to add oil to the mix, you know, like pour a fish oil in it or whatever. And I would spot like 10 spots on every clear, it was very, very weedy, and I'd spot it on like every clear spot I could find all around the lake, because it's quite often only me or maybe me and one other person on. And then you could just watch the following morning, you could see where the fish were feeding, like on where the slick was. And again, that's something I haven't done for quite a lot of years, deliberately used an oily mix. I mean, you can't do it on a day ticket lake or on a pressured lake, but on a lake where, you know, it's like a low stock type lake, and obviously you can get up every morning, see where the fish are showing, but you want to know where they're feeding as well, don't you? So, you know, it is a method you can use if you've got a lake pretty much to yourself. Like, you know, put a few spots on all the clear spots, and then in the morning, especially if there's a wind on the water, see where the slicks are coming up from. What was I talking about before? Oh, yeah, talking about the rigs that I was using on Elstow. So, like, the fish were very aware of you on Elstow. I don't know if it's quite as riggy as Christchurch was, but there were definitely fish that had been fished for by good anglers for a lot of years, hadn't they? So there was an element of having to be on the top of your game to catch fish out of there. I think there was definitely an element of that, because, you know, you would see the fish knew when there were no lines in the water and the spots had all start slicking up, like literally the second you reeled in, which means the fish were there all the time, weren't they? They just weren't feeding.
Yeah, what surprised me with Pit One though is, I mean, Pit One was the first place that I ever used fake corn, and I never forget it was Christoph that, you know, showing me fake corn, supple braided hook length, right? It was like a knotless knot, and then just a small D made out of the continuation of the hair coming back through the eye. So it was a D, but it was a, you know, a supple loose D. On a small hook. And even though the fish were fished for quite a lot, I always thought that was quite an ineffective rig, really, you know, for the amount of fish it caught. Or I don't know, maybe it didn't catch, we just thought it caught that, you know, a lot of fish, but it didn't really, because there were times when, you know, you'd be fishing on them features, pick one sort of place where you've got three rods on a tight spot, and you'd see the fish going. There were times when you wouldn't get bites, you know. So maybe they were getting away with it then, you know. But I was always amazed that the rigs I was using there, I always thought they were pretty crap, really. But they did used to still pick quite a few fish up.
My adjustment to how I fished on there is because everybody fished corn. I mean, people said to us, you won't catch on a boilie on here. So I was determined. I was using the Scopex squid at the time, which is one of, you know, my all-time most successful baits. And I was determined to catch on boilies and not to fish the hemp and corn method. But I thought that the fish, because everybody fished the same way, and it was very effective, like the way they fished has hammered other lakes around the country, as you said, fishing very accurately baited tight spots, three rods on a dinner plate, and yeah, putting a bucket of hemp and pellet over it every day.
Well, it became known as the Elstow method, didn't it?
Yeah,
the lads, them lads that could fish it, could fish that method well, would just go and turn any lake over, really, if they'd not seen it before.
Yeah, they'd have mega hits, wouldn't they? Like 20, 30 fish hits on St. John's and stuff, like, you know, in a few hours. It was very effective. But so I thought the fish are used to feeding that way. They used to feed in tight areas, fishing, you know, like this hemp and pellet that's small itemed stuff on the bottom. And I thought, like, these fish are not moving around much, like, yeah, you know, so because they're not moving around much, a really, really short rig would do the job. And it definitely worked for me. I mean, I remember you used to take the mickey out of me for the short hook links that I was using. I was literally using 3-inch hook links with a stick threaded down it. And obviously you've still got some play in it because you've got like the hook link clip. And I'm wondering if that fishing my normal way with that very short hook link with the stick might be how I should fish Christchurch. I'm certainly going to do it on, I'm going to fish the anchor rig with a very, very short hook link and a heavy lead on one or two rods, and I'm going to use some sort of stiff anti-eject rig on another rod, whether it be a pop-up or a bottom bait rig, I'm not sure yet. I'm going to experiment. If I can use like you use like a braid longish braid hook link with a stiff, a very short to the bottom stiff hook section on a D rig. I think I might go for something.
I mean, you can actually buy. I mean, there's some braided hook lengths out at the minute, isn't there? That, you know, you can get the supple coated or you can get the stiff coated. It might be worth just, you know, making a hook length up as normal and then completely stripping it off and just, you know, out of the stiff version of that coated hook length, because it is quite stiff, and just stripping it all off and leaving just the, you know, the last inch and a half, 2 inch even, of the stiff coating on the end. And again, you've got kind of a semi-stiff section there, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I like using the cultured hook baits at the minute that Nash do, which is like basically a liquidised paste around like a wafter or a... So it's essentially a bottom bait rig, and I really like using them. I like the sort of cloud that comes off, and the citrus ones that they do leave like a milky cloud in the water. So I want to find a rig that's effective that I can still use those, because I just like that. You know, very rarely do people use the paste round a boilie anymore, and obviously with those cultured things, and I think DNA do something similar with the what they call the cured hook baits. I think they use a liquid for that as well. It basically disperses in water, and I think that's a great edge on hook baits.
Yeah.
You know, attraction wise. I want a rig where I can still use those as a hook bait, and, you know, sort of not a pop up rig essentially.
I'll tell you what. I've noticed quite a lot on quite a few waters, especially places like Christchurch or any heavily fished water where the fish are really hard to catch. A bit like the Bluebell Complex as well.
Mm.
It amazes me the indication some anglers on them. I mean, you know, a lot of them concede that the fish are really hard to catch and they're sucking and blowing and they're not really going to bolt as soon as they've pricked himself. But yet you're look down at the way they've got the rod set up. They might have the butt ring rammed up against the alarm, or the butt ring literally rammed up against the backside of the alarm, which is even worse. Then obviously you've got your line then coming from the lake down your tip eye, down your first five eyes, and then it hits your butt ring. And then because it's tight up against the back of your alarm, it then has to go up at a 45 degree angle over the top of the alarm and then back down to a bobbin.
Yeah,
virtually locked. It's virtually locked up. And if you are fishing for them type of fish that we've been talking about, that, you know, the first course of action is not to bolt, you know, and it's just going to stay there, shake its head, or try and get rid of the rig. You're just never going to know about it if you've got your rod, you know, your indication set up like that.
So much resistance, isn't there?
It's just too much resistance. Yeah, I mean, it takes me back to the first time I fished top flash back in the early 90s. I was really, there was me and a lad called Barry Middleton that used to fish with at the time, and we were really sort of anal about our indication setups at the time. We had these pepper pots, we had the rods pointing down the line, and for the, you know, the line would come out of the lake and it wouldn't touch any eyes. The way we used to set it up, it wouldn't touch any eyes. The first point of contact for the line once it came in from the lake was the roller on the alarm on the optonic or that we used at the time. So it was all completely balanced, and any sort of increase or decrease, literally the most minute amount of increase or decrease in tension on the line would register on the bobbin, regardless of how tight that line was. I mean, it's just like, if you can equate it to a set of scales, regardless of how much weight you put on that scale, if you look at your line as the set of scales, no matter how much weight you put on, even if you put, you know, half a pound of weight on, and then you add an ounce, it will still register. If you put 55 pound of weight on, and you add an ounce, it will still register, because it's all completely balanced.
Mm.
That's how we used to set our fishing setups up. And it was funny, because the first year I ever fished it, I fished it for three days. The last 3 days of this particular season, and I caught quite a few fish. But on my very first walk round there, I was talking to a few of the lads on there, and at the time, I was really on one about indication and, you know, making it all so sensitive. And I'd walk around and just general chatting to the lads, you know, how many fish have you had, how many fish would you expect to catch during the course of a season, you know, what are the bites like? And nearly all the lads that I spoke to were saying, oh, don't worry about the bites, they're just one-toners. And I was like, well, that was music to my ears, because I was thinking, well, they're obviously missing something, because you don't get one-toners. All carp don't give you one-toners straight away, so they're obviously missing, you know, the first, I don't know, 60-70% of whatever was happening, they were missing. Anyway, I fished it the following season, and I think I had something like 35 bites that season, and I bet 31 of them were just 1 or 2 inch lifts, just light. It was just, the indication set was so balanced, it was just the line tightening up, the bobbin lifting. And there was a few times where there'd be lads in, you know, having cups of teas with me and my peg, and bobbin would just go beep, 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 and just lift slightly, and I would just lean down, that's a fish, grab it, line down, bump, and they were like, no way. I had no idea. I would have never hit that. But the thing is, they would have never got them two or three bleats, because the setup they had was just, it was just too locked up. Yeah. You know what I mean? So obviously going for somewhere like Christchurch, any water where it's a tricky water and you know the fish are not going to bolt, you've got to think about indication. Otherwise you'd never even know what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've had this conversation a lot over the years about indication and with the slack line craze. And I know you've used slack lines and stuff, but there's a balance between not spooking the fish that might be in your swim with lines and fishing for pressured fish that, like, you know, you might only get a few beats before you've got done, you know, the fish has managed to get off or whatever. Like, there's a balance between the two, and I always think somewhere like, as we're talking about Christchurch a lot, you know, a heavily pressured day ticket water, the fish know you're there constantly. Like, they've probably got very good at still eating while you're fishing for them. So I don't think they're spooking because there's lines in the swims. So you might as well go for the best possible indication you can get. And I've always found, like, semi-tight lines is the best way for indication.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, obviously, you've had a lot of thoughts on that over the years, but, you know, having a little spring in your bobbin when you pull it down, and like you say, trying to have the rod pointing directly at the spot, not the line, you know, so there's no resistance. As you said, you can, with certain alarms as well, you know, you can get your rod pointing at the spot with the line comes out the water and it doesn't touch a single eye. There's like no resistance between there and the roller, as you said, and then you've got, you know, a nice angle coming down to a balanced bobbin, not too heavy, not too light, and you're getting to know about every single indication, aren't you? And you know, the fishing complete slack lines, you're missing out on a lot of that. You're only knowing about it once that fish is nailed. And if you're fishing in extremely riggy water, a tricky fish water, I think slack lines are probably better where you're fishing low stock waters with fish that are not used to being fished for, because probably, you know, when you do get a fish feeding on your spot, it's not expecting to get caught, so it's probably going to hang itself. I think you're more likely to miss an opportunity by having, you know, something different in the swim that they're not used to, i.e. an angler being there with tight lines going through the water. So I would rather go for, you know, that slack line type, trying to keep a low profile look on lakes where they're not expecting to get caught, because I don't think the rig's as important for non-riggy fish, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I don't know, I tailor my indications to different situations, you know. I mean, Nash's Lake last month, for instance, you know, I was using heavy in lines, fishing the line complete. I mean, you know, this fishing situation, it was only a couple of rod lengths out that we were fishing, so my line was literally going straight down off my rod tip into the lake. It was about as slack as you could get it.
Yeah.
But on the other end of that was a short rig with a heavy in line. And again, you know, what everyone seems to be getting into now is the, you know, the hand sharp and hooks. The hooks are super sharp. So once you do get that prick, once the fish does give you that, whereas in the past it might, you know, a prick might sink the point of a hook at a couple of mil. Now a prick, especially if it's on a heavy lead, might sink the hook past the barb. So, you know, in that situation, that, you know, the bites I had, you know, they were just, there was no bleeps, there was no nothing. It was just 1 minute the rod was there was nothing at me, and the next minute there was a fish on the end, because it was it was hot by that time.
Yeah. I think we've been well over now. I think we'll leave it there. We'll get you back to do a bit more chatting. I love having the technical chats. I think we've pretty much done it. I think we've done the kind of chat that we might have had on the phone anyway, which is what I've always wanted to get on the show.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Cool.
Brilliant. Speak soon.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So I'd like to say a big thank you to Roger. We finally got him chatting on The Carpcast, which is something I've tried to do for ages. And I've been overly confident about doing it. We just want a normal chat, and I think we did it. So there's a load of stuff I would have liked to have talked about, but we will have him on again. I know Kevin's keen to have a chat with Roger on the mic as well at some point next time we get a chance to go down to the Nash complex. So again, yeah, big thanks to Rog. It's going to be a shorter podcast this week. Mark's internet is playing up a little bit, so we've had to lose Mark. Dodgy BT internet connection. I'm not sure what it was, but you might have noticed the sound quality wasn't great on Mark's side earlier on. We've got a new sponsor of the show that I'd like to tell you about, a fantastic fishery, more relevant for the northwest anglers, but the old Borwick complex of lakes, which is up at Carnforth in Lancashire. It's now called Clearwater Fisheries. A friend of ours, Alex, has purchased the complex. He's got big plans for it. He wants to make it the best syndicate lake in the northwest. There is a number of lakes there. There's a number of day ticket lakes. There's decent pike fishing in the winter, and you can fish day tickets as well. He's offering a season ticket that runs from November till November. So you can apply for that now. It's £400 for a year, which is extremely good value. There's fish to over £40 in Jimmy's Lake, and I know that Alex has got tens of thousands of pounds worth of hand-picked UK carp ordered to go in over the winter. It's quite well stocked anyway. I know he's taking a lot of the smaller fish out of the main lake, putting them in the other lakes around the complex, and you know he's making a really decent carp water as the main lake. If you want more information, there is a Facebook page, which is Clearwater Fisheries Carnforth, which is it's up just past Lancaster, Kellett Lane in Lancaster. I fished up there last winter a couple of times. A friend of mine had quite a few fish out there, Dave, my mate Dave. There's, you know, there's a reasonable head of 30s in there, and the big one came out at 42 off the top about a month ago. That's a fish that's getting bigger. There's a fantastic cafe up there as well. The cafe was always good even before Alex got it, and I know he's had to upgrade it as well. He's changed the staff and stuff, and I know the chef is fantastic and the food is amazing. It's a really nice complex, and it's going to get better and better and better over the next 12 months, and Alex is supporting us. I'm also going to be doing some tuitions on there as well. If you check out our website, thecarpcast.com, there'll be information going up there soon. If you do fancy going fishing with me for 24 hours or 48 hours, I'm going to start offering that probably just after the winter, maybe over the winter if somebody really wants to go. But if you're based in the northwest area, then that's where I will be doing them. So it gives us a chance to learn the lake and hopefully catch some fish and hopefully brush up your skills. So yeah, if that's something of interest to you, then get yourself over to our website, www.thecarpcast.com. Now, Mark had interviewed Oz Holness, which we're going to put out on this episode, but I wanted to get the Roger bit out because it's quite current, because he's fishing himself this week. I'm literally, as I finish recording this, about to shoot off to Oxford. So I wanted to get it out as we can update if anything happens for either of us next week. I've just seen another on the net, actually. It's just flashed up on my Facebook that Oxley's Lake on the linear complex has just been closed. And it says because it hasn't been fishing very well, because the fish haven't been feeding, which seems... I think the concern that there's a problem there. So, because Oxley's is an extremely well-stocked lake. The press release says they currently have concerns about the health care of the carp in Oxley's Lake. The fish are not feeding or acting in their usual manner. As a precaution, we've taken the decision to close the water as of today, Wednesday the 26th of October. The EA have been informed and they're taking advice. Hunt's Corner's closed as well, although there's no problems with that lake. It's the same gate access to Oxley's, so by locking the gates for Oxley's, it makes it inaccessible. As Chris Blunt, the fisheries manager, has posted that. So, yeah, beware if you were planning to go down to Oxley's. It may be closed for the foreseeable future. And we hope, obviously, all the fish are well. I know a lot of places have fish really slow. Obviously, they've seen the fish acting strangely in there, which is why they've shut it. But places have been fishing slow the last couple of weeks. Big fish have been caught, but... I'm hoping there's a bit of southwesterly wind. I'm looking outside now. Well, I was actually stood outside the front of my house at 1:30 a.m. this morning in a t-shirt, thinking, blimey, it's warm. You know, it's double figures again at night. So fingers crossed that there is some fishy action to be had this week. We'll update you next week. We will have Mark's interview of Oz Holness as well, you know, British record holder. Got a book coming out soon, and Mark had a great hour and a half conversation with him as well. So yeah, we will have Oz on next week. Till then, tight lines, catch some carps, and we'll see you next week.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.